Let's get into the Word and let's see where we're going to end up today. Genesis 1, 24, 25. And God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures according to their kinds, livestock and creeping things, and beasts of the earth according to their kinds." And it was so. And God made the beasts of the earth according to their kinds, and the livestock according to their kinds, and everything that creeps on the ground according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. So if you've been in this world for any amount of time, you've heard of evolution and evolutionary theory. But those words can get confused. I don't like using the word evolution. Here's why I don't like using it. Because it can mean so many different things to so many different people. So as I was looking here, I'm like, what would be a definition of evolution? I look back. My go-to reference for definitions is Webster's 1828 dictionary. You kind of go back in time and you go, wait a second. Did this word exist back then, first of all? And if it did, what did it mean back then when it first started? So Webster's 1828 dictionary on evolution. It is the act of unfolding or unrolling. A series of things unrolled or unfolded as the evolution of ages. So the idea here is that there's time rolling or there's something rolling, but it's an unrolling. So I looked at that and I go, okay, that's not really a definition that works with what people use today. That meant something back then. So we already see this word evolution can have multiple or different meanings even across time. So I looked at this, I said, what's a modern definition here for evolution? And I found this out. Under the umbrella of evolution, this word evolution, it could mean a couple different things. Here's one. It could be defined as seasonal changes. Changes that take place over short amounts of time. Things like trees having leaves that then in the fall change color and then fall down off the tree. That word evolution could be used to talk about that. But is that typically what you think of when you think of the word evolution? Is tree leaves growing and then falling in the fall? I don't. But the word evolution can be thrown under, that could be thrown under the word evolution. Another one that could be used for the word evolution is something that I'd like to call variation within a species. In other words, you end up having human beings with a mom and a dad with different eye colors. My wife has blue eyes, I have brown eyes. Our kids all have brown eyes. However, in the next generation, as they get married, we're really excited to see the color of our kids, our grandkids' eyes, as well as their hair color, because a lot of variation can come in there. It's not more information being added. It's a switching on and switching off of different traits that are there. So these are variations within a species. This is not one species becoming another species. This is just variations. And here's the thing. We see that happening. That does happen. A word that could be used for that, that you may hear, is microevolution. Again, I don't like using the word evolution because a lot of stuff's going to get thrown under evolution. And here's another definition. This is probably the one that most people would associate with evolution, is that there are complete changes from one species to another. So a bear becoming a whale. Now, if you laugh at that bear becoming a whale thing, I have to let you know this, is that in The Origin of the Species, in 1859, Charles Darwin speculated how through natural selection, it could cause a land mammal to turn into a whale. This is in Charles Darwin's book. You just laughed at it, though, right? I don't know how Charles would feel about that. 1859, The Origin of the Species, in that book, in that edition, as a hypothetical example, Darwin used the North American black bear, which are known to catch insects by swimming in the water with their mouths open. And so here's a quotation from The Origin of the Species, Charles Darwin: "I can see no difficulty in a race of bears being rendered by natural selection more aquatic in their structure and habits with larger and larger mouths till the creature was produced as monstrous as a whale." Said Charles Darwin in The Origin of the Species, 1859. Now, did that idea go well with the public? No, you just laughed at it. A bear becoming a whale? Darwin was so embarrassed by the ridicule that he received that he removed the swimming bear passage from later editions of that book. So, this word evolution, what does it mean? Pretty much when somebody says evolution, I have to say, what do you mean by that word? So to not cause confusion in what we mean when we mean evolution. When I talk evolution up here, what I'm saying that it means is the belief of some people, the theory that species can, through natural selection and beneficial mutations, become another species. I don't believe that that's true, and I don't believe that the Bible supports that at all. What do I believe? Well, what some people in the world call microevolution, that there are variations within a species. I was looking recently at the newer species of dogs that are not newer variations, newer breeds of dogs that have come about. There's some pretty crazy dogs that have come out. Some are super cute. One was a combination, maybe you guys know it, I forget the name right off the bat. It's a combination between a husky and a Pomeranian. What is it called? Somebody tell me. Pomsky. Man, these, I looked at it, I'm like, that's a Photoshop. That is no way that that is a real animal. They're adorable. If you like little dogs. If you like little dogs. They're pretty amazing. We're going to talk about dogs in just a moment here. So I looked on Berkeley's site on evolution. And Berkeley's 101 page on evolution defines biological evolution as simply a matter of change over time. Okay, and here's how they grouped it. And this is where you see this huge umbrella of evolution being applied to so many things. They said, well, trees can grow leaves, and then the leaves fall, and that shows evolution, change through time. I'm like, no. They said mountain ranges erode over millions of years, and that shows evolution. I was like, wow, we're really using this one word to throw into everything here. Then they go to the next one. We see different traits between human beings genetically and their offspring, their kids, having these traits and different traits. Oh, I agree with that. They call that evolution. And then you know what they put at the very end? They put at the very end, over a large number of years, evolution produces tremendous diversity in forms of life. And all of a sudden they show this tree of life. And I'm like, wow, you went from leaves on a tree changing color and falling, mountains eroding, genetic traits between a father and a mother producing kids with different traits here. I got all those ones there. I wouldn't use evolution for either of any of those three. But then at the very end you go, oh, and by the way, it's exact same as the tree of life of evolutionary theory. That's on Berkeley's, you can look at it online, it's Berkeley's Evolution 101 page. I'm like, see, that's what happens is you take this rug of evolution and you sweep everything underneath and you go, there, it's all evolution. No! So when I talk about changes that are happening within a species, I'm going to say variation within a kind. Did you notice that in the Bible as we were reading Genesis 1, 24 and 25? How many times in your Bible did it say according to their kinds? God, it's like God, being God, could see into the future and realize that evolution would be a thing that people would be confused about. And so he already wrote in the Word, had Moses document here, make sure it says in here, living creatures according to their kind, livestock and beasts according to their kind. God designed each uniquely. God designed animals. God designed human beings. God designed birds and fish. And he put this genetic information into them. So Darwin, as he's in the Galapagos, as he's going down and he sees the beaks of these finches and how they change, and he goes, well, these islands are isolated, so they must have, and he postulates this idea that they had evolved, and then some other people jump on this bandwagon, and then they go with it. The thing is, the dots that he's connecting, sure, I can agree with the observations he'd made. There are different finches with different beaks. I'm sure if we went, we would see that. I'm not disputing those facts. I'm disputing the way that those facts are connected, how the dots are connected. My kids, four of them, they've all gone through those dot books, you know, the ones that you connect, you know, connect the dots. Here's what I noticed about the connected dot books. I have yet to see a connect the dot book that does not have numbers in it. You can have a connected dot book without any numbers. You know what you're going to end up with? Lots of different pictures. Some of which are not, most of which are not even what it's supposed to be. You need to know what the numbers are to know how to connect the dots. I believe Darwin and others have connected dots and then sold it as, well, this is the way the dots are supposed to be connected, when the Bible tells us that things are not that way. Here's one thing I want to mention from a few weeks before, this idea that non-life can produce life. Abiogenesis. Can non-life, can something not living make something living? It cannot. Louis Pasteur, we may know him for pasteurization, He also did a lot of work in studying germs. There was this idea that, germs in your body, they just show up. These things just happen spontaneously. In other words, nothing creates something. And so Louis Pasteur, a scientist, says, well, let's look and see if that can, is that true? That hypothesis that nothing can produce something, non-life can produce life. So he ends up doing these experiments, and he has these flasks. And the way he did it is he made a broth, kind of like a chicken broth. He made this broth, and he found that if you leave this broth out in the open air, stuff grows in it. So he said, wait a second, let's try an experiment here. So he took this flask with a long, curved swan end to it. And I don't know if I gave you, yeah, there we go. This is actually one of his flasks. So Louis Pasteur ends up going, okay, let's put some broth in there, great. And then now let's heat it up to kill anything that's in there. Okay, everything's killed. And with this swan neck there, he left it just like that, and he had this experiment going for years. And do you know what grew in that broth there? Nothing. Nothing grew in there. You know why? Because there was no easy way for the germs to work their way in, bacteria to work their way in, and to suddenly culture and to make the broth cloudy. That's how they could tell that something was growing in there, is the broth would get cloudy. And he had another one right next to it with your standard opening. And he noticed the one that was next to it in a very short amount of time got cloudy. But the one that had this curved neck in it was preventing life from getting in. In other words, what was causing the solution to become cloudy, what was causing people to get sick, these germs, these bacteria, they were already existing. It has never been proven that non-life can produce life. At which point I ask you, then how did life start? You're saying nothing created everything? That has never been scientifically proven. Because nothing doesn't produce something. As we look in the Word, where did it all come from? God. God made it all. So this idea of variations within a kind. Do I believe it? Yes, I do believe there's variations in a kind. Natural selection. Yeah, believe that too. That as creatures are in different climates, people are in different climates, there will be some variation that happens within them. I'm sure that if my family, if we ended up, our kids, for Dawn and I, our kids, their skin color is something in between my skin color and her skin color. And so as we look at it, my daughter Miley would be like, Dad, see, my hand is white like Mom's, and then the top of my hand is dark like yours. So this is the American side of me, and this is the Indian side of me. And I'm all... That was her, you know, figuring out. But let's say we moved to a northern climate here, and we went someplace, I don't know, Scandinavia, right? Colder place, not so much sunshine, and we decided to stay there, and we had generation after generation. Would there be a change that you would see in the offspring, in our family? Yeah, you would see that. Would our skin lighten? Probably. And other things that would happen. And these are factors that happen with these variations. That's going to happen. There's no disputing that at all. But that is not evolution. All the information existed there. My wife was praying that one of our kids would end up having blue eyes. But unfortunately, as far as I can go back in my family, we've got dark brown eyes. So, but here's the thing. Their kids, our grandkids, could have, wow, who knows? You know, depending on who they marry and how the genetic information gets mixed, not added onto, combined. It's changes that are already in the information that already exists. But what evolution is saying is that more information is being added. Things are getting better, if you will. And how does it happen? Through natural selection. Okay, I believe natural selection, but it doesn't lead to evolution. And random mutations that are beneficial. Beneficial mutations. Beneficial mutations. One very common mutation that we see is cancer. Is that beneficial? No. They did an experiment because this idea of, well, Jim, it's really hard to prove this stuff because, you know, people's lives, you know, if you're going to use another person as an experiment, the person who's the scientist is going to die because the human being is going to live as long as he is. Well, we need to have maybe some animal that we can use that has a very short lifespan so that we can get multiple generations because then we'll see evolution happening. So a fruit fly experiment. There's been a fruit fly experiment going on now for 105 years. 105 years of fruit flies being bred, and these poor fruit flies are getting, nuked with radiation and trying to be manipulated, trying to force a mutation to happen that will be beneficial. There are some things that happen to these fruit flies. Some of them, as some of the research say, researchers say, they turn into monsters. So their antenna end up actually growing feet. They end up with four wings instead of two wings. Oh, it's great. See, that's evolution. It's a mutation. They're better. Here's the thing. They're not functional. And so now they have dead weight. Now they can't even fly. That wasn't beneficial at all. And the way that they even stay alive is because the researchers and the scientists are having the environment be a certain way so that they can make it through, so that they can hopefully reproduce. But in this 105-year experimentation on fruit flies, has there been beneficial mutations for the fruit fly? Has it evolved in 105 years of how many thousands of generations of fruit flies? Have they evolved into something better? No, they are still fruit flies of the same kind. So we think about this here. I told you we talk about dogs, man's best friend, right? There's also the other animal, right? You guys know what the other animal is. Cats, right? No, don't get me wrong. Cats are awesome. They're great. If you cook them right, they're just amazing. No, just kidding. Just kidding. I'm just kidding. I'm not a big cat person. I'm allergic to cats. Okay, I'm not a big cat person. But I didn't have a dog growing up. When I grew up, when I got married, which might be when I grew up, when I got married, my wife shows up, Dawn shows up, and at the house, and something was different. I look, and there was these prints on the porch. I was like, what is this? And I look in the laundry room as I walked in, I'm like, what? Did we get a dog? We got a dog. And so I want to show you a picture of our dog. That's not our dog. It's definitely not our dog. There we go. So we got a couple dogs. Oh, by the way, there's Xander. He's 10 now. There's Jaya. She's 11. Not there. And so there's a Ruger. Ruger's our dog in the far back there. And there's Indy in the front there. So they're really, really cool dogs. And we did a lot of stuff together, these dogs. I mean, at first I'm like, oh, a dog, another mouth to feed. But, you know, you live in Arizona. There's not any trees out there, okay? Like, so you got to plant trees. And so Ruger faithfully helped me by being a supervisor as I planted trees. He didn't even help dig. He just would watch. And so Ruger and I spent lots of time together. And this is one of my favorite videos right here. I'm bouncing a ball. Watch this. That's Jaya. Watch this. Go get it, Ruger. Go get it. Oh! Love it. That is a classic Thomas video right there. And then don't tell Jaya that you saw that. And then the next picture we have, this was one taken just this last summer. There's good old Rugs. That's my brother Jay. And so we went over, and when we came here to California, the first place that we had moved into, we couldn't have any dogs, so we had to give away our dogs. And Ruger was the first dog that I ever had. And so he went with my brother, decided to take him and flew him from Arizona to New York, and he went from living on 4 acres in Arizona to for a little while there, living in an apartment in Brooklyn. That was quite a change for Ruger. But then he moved to another house there. And so this summer, we just got to see Ruger. He's looking a little old right there. And then I got word about 3 weeks ago. Jay's like, yeah, you know, my brother's like, hey, you know, we had to take him to the doctors here. And he's like, it stinks, man. I goes, I think we got to put him down. You know, he's not doing well. And so I was like, I was like, well, you know, it's a dog. And then something happened that I didn't expect. I didn't expect it. He's my first dog. I didn't expect it. I'm like, and I started, the reason why I had these pictures is I was kind of looking through them. I sent a couple to my brother, you know. And I'm like, and I just was like, Lord, thanks for letting me have a dog. Now, a dog is not a human being, okay? And human beings aren't animals. But God created them. God created them, and on the sixth day here, on the same day that he created human beings, he ended up creating all these animals. And I think us as human beings, we have more of attachment to land animals than we do to other animals. I mean, granted, there's people who love birds and love animals that swim in the oceans as well. But generally speaking, people really can connect with land animals. The companionship, the friendliness. I got to say, Ruger and I had, you know, I mean, we didn't have conversations. I talked, he listened mostly, you know. But there's more than one night walking out on the property, the stars are out. I'm like, man, God is just awesome. Ruger, you're a lucky dog, you know. You're just a lucky dog. You just... Man, and it's like, Jim, you're talking to your dog. I know I'm talking to my dog. I understand that. But he's not a person, but it's just this companionship, this, I just was really thankful for the Lord, for him creating these creatures. I didn't realize that it would affect me as much. So I want to switch topics here just a little bit. There's a whole, so much information. There's another whole study on how horses, you can look, and traditional evolution will tell you that horses have evolved, and they have all these different size horses, and they go, this horse became this horse, became this horse, became this horse. But the truth is horses did not evolve. The genetic code for horses, their kind, was always put in there. And from that variation, you can see a large variety of horses. Even today, for someone who loves horses, not me, for somebody out there who loves horses, horses are really big dogs. They just really eat a lot from, you know. But somebody said that if you give a girl a horse, she'll never have enough money for drugs or alcohol. So who posted that? Was that you, Dusty? You posted that. Jeremy, is that true? The no money part? The no money part, yeah. So the idea of horses, if you look at our world today, there's a large variety of horses. What if we took all those horses and said, oh, no, these horses didn't live at the same time. This little one was here first, and then we'll take this bigger one, put it here, and let's make a line and just say they all evolved. How about they all existed at the same time? Why is that not possible? As we're looking here, too, in the taxonomy, in the naming of creatures, there's this interesting phrase, and here's what the phrase is, Lazarus taxon. What does that mean? That means that there's creatures that were said to be extinct that, whoops, our bad, they're not extinct. They're alive. We thought that they died off. One of them is the coelacanth. The coelacanth, if we could put a picture of that one up here, is this fish. The coelacanth, look at that. I mean, that is, man, look at that. That is a really cool fish. I mean, you know, it's got like built-in this camouflage thing going on. And I mean, just, yeah, it's amazing. So this coelacanth here was, you know, there's fossils of them found in rocks that have been dated to 70 million years old. Poor coelacanth died 70 million years ago. Poor guy. Oh, wait. No, we caught one in 1938. Oh, and we catch them now often. Oh, our bad. They didn't go extinct 70 million years ago. Wait. If they lived 66 to 70 million years ago, so if once you're at 66, why don't you just round up to 70 is what I say. So, but it's okay, fine. 66 million years ago. Here's the interesting thing. The coelacanth. If we compare the coelacanth that we catch today, the live animal, if we compare it to the fossil, how much has it changed from the fossil? You know what the answer is? None. It looks just like the fossil. 66 million years have gone by. How come the coelacanth hasn't evolved? Because they don't. Oh, and by the way, it wasn't 66 million years ago. The coelacanth, this living, it was mind-blowing when it came about. I wonder how many kids are learning about that in school. Oh, we thought this creature was extinct, but he's actually not extinct, and it hasn't changed one bit from when we said it existed. That kind of puts a huge hole into things. But I have a list of different animals that are said to have gone extinct. The Laotian rock rat, said to have gone extinct 11 million years ago. Found, first time again, in 1996. Let's see, what other ones do we have here? There's this microbacteria that was thought to have gone extinct 11 million years ago. That was also found recently. Let's see here. A few other ones 100 million years ago. And this information is out there. Even there was a type of pine tree that was only known from fossils that were dated from 2 to 90 million years ago. And they found a stand of these pine trees in China in 1994. You see, when you look at the world, what you realize is this world is not as old as people is telling us that it is. And this evolution, show me these intermediary, these in-between creatures. Where are they? How come Mr. Coelacanth here hasn't? How come these haven't developed out into you know, hands and feet? Why hasn't that happened yet? Wouldn't that be beneficial for him? I mean, why haven't we seen that? Because it doesn't happen. Because it does not happen. I think about this with humility and wonder. As human beings, you know, we're the most advanced creature here on the planet, right? You would say. And so it's like, okay, we should have the largest instruction manual, the largest genome. We should, because we are the most complex, right? We should have the most detailed instruction manual, because we can think of art and love and beauty, and we can come up with music and the internet and cell phones, and we're just really smart and advanced, and so we must have the largest instruction manual, right? Well, that's not how it actually works. The human genome, as it's been investigated, and they've been sequencing the genome. They started in 1990, and they sequenced the human genome in 2003. In that time, they found out that our quote-unquote instruction manual is smaller and smaller than we thought. The assumption? It's massive, because we're awesome. As it turns out, it doesn't need to be as big as we thought. In fact, there are some creatures that have bigger instruction manuals than we do. Well, they must be incredibly advanced and huge and amazing creatures, right? Let me show you one of these. This is a nematode. A nematode, look at that right there. This creature right here has a bigger instruction manual than you or I. How do you feel about that? Oh, by the way, if you're looking for scale on this thing, the distance from one side to the other is 1/1000th of an inch. This nematode that's 1/1000th of an inch has a larger instruction manual than you or I. I think God knew that we would find this information out and it would cause us to be humbled. So that we would not elevate ourselves in such a way. These right here, they can be at the smallest, from end to end, they can be a tenth of a millimeter. But there's some larger ones that can be 2.5 millimeters long. But these are, generally speaking, really small. But this isn't one that even has the biggest one. You want to see an animal that even has a bigger genome than even this nematode here? Oh, there we go. That is a water flea. That looks like a space invader is actually what that looks like. But that is a water flea. The water flea has a larger genome than human beings. Yeah, wow is right. So I was reading this. Geneticists long ago debunked the idea that more complex organisms require more genes. Sure, as they find the research, they realize, look at these creatures have more genes than we do. The water flea has 31,000 genes. By comparison, human beings, 19,000. So this guy has 31,000, we have 19. It's the most in any animal. The fact is that the human genome is so small raises an interesting question. What exactly is it about the human genome that gives rise to our staggering complexity? In the brain, for example, compared to that of other animals like monkeys, worms, or even water fleas? A good answer to that question will win prizes. There is a really good answer to that question. It's a really good answer to that question. God has created us. Where did this come from? In God's wisdom. I looked at that and I was looking at that image yesterday just humbled, going, wow, Lord. You knew that we would find this out and go, that water flea has a bigger instruction manual than I do. And yet, look what you've done with what you've given to each of us as human beings. Okay, let's talk about dinosaurs. You guys want to talk about dinosaurs? Let's talk about dinosaurs. Dinosaurs. Your Bibles are open, Genesis 1:30. Here's the thing about dinosaurs. Genesis 1:30. And to every... Oh, pause for just a second. Come on, you're in school and you see those pictures of the dinosaurs. Dinosaurs are cool. Dinosaurs are just cool. You're like, wow. But then you go, dinosaurs are from another time. They're not from our time. They're from another time long, long ago. And, you know, they were just voracious and Tyrannosaurus Rex. Come here, you know, with its little arms. And he stood upright. No, he didn't. His spine and the, you look at it, no, his skeletal system did not work that way. He was lengthwise. He went out straight. He wasn't standing up. But standing up, you know, it looks a little bit more ferocious. So we'll put him up that. No, it wasn't like that. But what did he eat? Oh, just these, you know, these carnivores are out eating other animals. Genesis 1:30. We're kind of jumping ahead in Genesis, but I want you to see this about these animals. And to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps on the earth, everything that has the breath of life, I have given every green plant for food. And it was so. Vegetarians. Herbivores. All of them. They didn't eat each other. I thought about this, and I thought, you know how awesome this is? This is like a zoo with no bars. And you're not worried about the animals eating you. And whatever animal that you can look around and see, they're all there. There's peace there. It is this perfect world that God has created. And see, those of you that are vegan, you're like, yeah, see, this is what I'm talking about right here. Look at this right there. So then this brings questions. Well, Jim, wait a second. What about their teeth? Have you seen their teeth? You know what? You're right. The evidence is that they had very pointy teeth. Yes. Can you deny that they have pointy? No, they have pointy teeth. But you know what else has pointy teeth in our world today? Panda bears have pointy teeth. Panda bears, carnivores, right? No, they're not. They have pointy teeth. Here's a mammal, bats. Bats have pointy teeth. You should look at them. They're really pointy. But they don't eat other flesh. So the idea that, oh, pointy teeth equals meat eater and has to, oh, no, it doesn't mean that has to be the case. We can see that in our own world. But when I was someplace in grade school here, a pastor came up, and man, this guy was just so excited. Like, I hadn't quite seen a pastor like this. He was pumped up about God. He was excited about God's word. And then he began to roll in some things of science into what he was saying. And I was just like, you are connecting some dots. I've had all these dots in my life, and I just didn't know how they worked. And all of a sudden, they clicked for me. The passage he took me to, he took us to as kids in this youth camp, was Job chapter 40. And I would ask that you could look up on the screen. You could also turn your Bibles to it. Job is just before the book of Psalms in your Bible. But if not, here it is on the screen. Job chapter 40. We're going to read about this amazing creature called the behemoth. Job chapter 40, verse 15. Behold, behemoth, which I made as I made you. He eats grass like an ox. Behold, his strength is in his loins and his power in the muscles of his belly. He makes his tail stiff like a cedar. The sinews of his thighs, these tendons of his thighs, are knit together. His bones are tubes of bronze. His limbs are like bars of iron. He is the first of the works of God. Not that he was made first, but as far as size goes, he's huge. Probably why he gets the name Behemoth. Let him who made him bring near his sword. For the mountains yield food for him where all the wild beasts play. Under the lotus plant he lies, in the shelter of the reeds and in the marsh. For his shade the lotus tree covers him, the willows of the brook surround him. Behold, if the river is turbulent, he is not frightened. He is confident though Jordan rushes against his mouth. Can one take him by his eyes or pierce his nose with a snare? In other words, can you catch this creature? And these questions are, no, you can't. No, you can't. See, God is talking to Job, letting him know, hey, who created this amazing creature called Behemoth? I did. Who's the only person that can do anything to this creature? I can. And he's using this behemoth, this massive creature who has a tail like a cedar tree. Wait, what creatures today have tails like cedar trees? Oh, wait, there aren't any. He's describing some creature that we don't see today, but that Job could have looked at as God is talking to Job. Job, do you see Behemoth? I hear Behemoth. I can't avoid Behemoth. He's Behemoth. That's his name. Job lived in a time of dinosaurs. In my mind, I was trying to resolve this because I was raised in a family, a Christian family. I went to church because my parents took me to church. It wasn't that I didn't believe God, but I just, at times I felt like I was being dragged to church. So then, in my mind, as I was growing up, this is how I kind of figured it out. Was okay, so there was like two different worlds. Like there was this world where there was cavemen. There's a world where, you know, the universe, you know, exploded. There was this big bang, everything coalesced, universes, all that other stuff. And then somehow it all cooled. And then somehow, you know, little bacteria became more. And then all of a sudden life came from no life. And then there was these cavemen. And they had clubs. And then this meteor came out of space, and it was an extinction event, and it wiped out the dinosaurs and all the human beings. And then Genesis 1:1, in the beginning, God. No, but wait, was that before? And see, these were the things that, as I was growing up, I'm like, how do I resolve what I'm being taught? And I see so much in society with what the Bible says. If God is God, then he must know what he's talking about. But how does that all work out? Here's how it works out, because these animals lived with man. That includes dinosaurs. So this idea of, well, Jim, come on, there's all these missing links. What about this? One of the questions that was asked, and I want to let you know that on that table, there's a piece of paper that says, do you have any questions about creation or the Bible that, you know, go with creation and all of that? Please write them down. One of the questions was asking very specifically about Lucy. What about this Lucy missing link that's been found? Well, there's more than just Lucy. One was called Piltdown Man. Piltdown Man was in 1912. And they found this, and they said, well, this is proof of human evolution. The jaw looked more ape-like, but the teeth and the skull were like a man. So as they looked at it, and they determined, they found it in 1912. In 1949 or so, they determined the teeth in the jawbone belonged to an orangutan that had been worn down artificially. In other words, it had been doctored. Let's take some teeth here, stick them in this jaw, file them all down, throw some dirt on it. Look what we found! Piltdown Man! This is proof of evolution. No. Then there was Nebraska Man, 1922. He said he found a fossil molar tooth. Yes, a tooth. And from that one tooth, they placed it as the missing link. In 1927, other parts of the skeleton were also found. And as they found the other parts of the skeleton, they realized that it was an extinct species of wild American pig. Look it up, Nebraska Man. Nebraska Man's not a man. He was a pig, a tooth. One tooth from a pig. You see, we live in a world where people go, I really revere what scientists say. Okay. Before you just do that, though, I would encourage you to look at the evidence. Ask, hey, what did you find that made you say that this was a proof of evolution? Well, we found stuff. Okay, yeah, I want to see the stuff. Show me the stuff. Oh, well, just trust us. Show me the stuff. We should all be asking that question. Show me these things. Here's some other ones. Java Man, Peking Man. This was in 1892. Java Man, these fossils, and Peking Man, two separate ones, as they look at them and they found them, they realize, they're like, well, this is the in-between. Harvard University, Ernest Marin, Harvard University, clearly classified both the Java Man and the Peking Man as human beings. Not halfway in between. They were human beings, 1944. Neanderthal Man! Oh, Neanderthal Man. Discovered in the Neander Valley, 1856. They suggested, evolution has suggested, that these Neanderthals were primitive ape men. But as they looked at it, they showed that there is nothing in Neanderthal Man, either in its locomotion, its manipulation, its intelligence, or even linguistic abilities that make it inferior to modern man. In other words, Neanderthal Man was a man. What about Ramapithecus? I just like saying that word, so I'm going to use that one. Ramapithecus. What is Ramapithecus? Well, he was found in India, 1930. Ooh, intrigue, right? Partial jawbone. We found half a jawbone. Ramapithecus! Wait a second! What do you mean? For 50 years, they said that this thing right here, this is the missing link. And after 50 years, they looked at it and said, oh, you know what? That is actually the half jawbone of a baboon. Our bad. But here's the thing. These statements get made, people believe them because scientists say them without asking for evidence, and then decades go by, and then very quietly, Bob mentioned it on the 80th page of some scientific journal, oh, by the way, we were totally wrong about that. But yet, what does the world think? Oh, we're evolved. We just came from these things, and there's just proof everywhere. But what about Lucy? I'm going to totally mispronounce this. Australopithecus. Thank you, Australopithecus. Thank you for helping the pastor. He needs help. Absolutely. Australopithecus. Lucy. Fossil discovered. Ooh, year I was born. Africa, 1974. 40 years ago, Lucy was found. Let's put up what was actually found of Lucy here. Just the bones here. Let's look at the bones. Let's look at the evidence. Ah, Lucy. Lucy, Lucy. 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 Let's go back to that other one just for a second here. Lucy. That's Lucy. That's Lucy. And that clearly shows human evolution. What that is a bunch of bones laid out. Now, here's what scientists have, evolutionists have filled in with their imaginations. Let's look at the next one here that was up there. And it's look at that. So the dark-colored ones are the ones that we found. Everything else is made up in the mind of man. Let's look at evidence here, people. Let's look at evidence. You may have heard of Lucy, and Lucy is the missing link. This is definitely it. Lucy was evolution's poster child, but Lucy is no different than any other monkey. She is not a human being. We go back to these bones here. One of these tests that was done, it was done in 2000, they discovered a locking system in Lucy's forearms, enabling Lucy to walk using knuckles in the same way as modern apes. The other thing is, if you look at you won't see it here, but we won't show this one here. We'll leave it on this. There's plenty of Lucy, stuffed Lucys, if you will. It's not actually, but they create these things that they put in museums. What you will see is Lucy standing like a human being. But if you look very carefully at her feet look just like human feet. Let's look at the evidence here. Do you see any feet? Do you see any feet? I see no feet. So how did we suddenly go from feet that can grab and how did you suddenly just go, oh, by the way, she had feet just like human beings. See? Another proof. The evidence does not show that. And there are more and more and more. Oh, I am running out of time. Here's what I want to say. This next one is probably the saddest one that I have found. And this really happened. And this happened 110 years ago, which isn't that long ago at all. The next one we're going to look at is not a missing link. This is a human being. His name is Otto Benga. Otto Benga. I'm going to tell you about Otto Benga here just a moment. We'll put that quote up in just a moment here. Let me tell you about Otto Benga. Otto Benga, he was born in maybe around 1883. Wasn't really sure. He was Congolese man. He was from the Mabuti tribe. They were pygmies. And he was featured in an anthropology exhibit at the St. Louis Fair in 1904. And then he was a human exhibit in 1906 at the Bronx Zoo. Benga was freed from African slave traders and to an explorer named Samuel Werner. He was a businessman recruiting Africans for the exposition. So Benga traveled with Werner to the United States. At the Bronx Zoo, Benga had free run of the grounds before and after he was quote-unquote exhibited in the zoo's monkey house. Except for a brief visit from Werner to Africa, Benga lived in the United States, mostly in Virginia, for the rest of his life. Displays of non-Western humans were examples of quote-unquote earlier stages of human evolution, and it was common in the early 20th century. There's a black pastor, Reverend R.S. MacArthur, and he spoke for churches there, for the black churches there in New York, and he petitioned the New York City mayor for the release of Benga from the Bronx Zoo. Benga became attached more to the animals there than the people because the people were treating him so poorly. I think we have a picture. Yeah, there's Benga. And so this man, he is not a missing link. He's a human being. Some of the quotes that I have here. So one of the clergymen here, his name is James H. Gordon. He said, quote, "Our race, we think, is depressed enough without exhibiting one of us with the apes. We think we are worthy of being considered human beings with souls." Pastor continues and says, "The Darwinian theory is absolutely opposed to Christianity." Yes, it is. "And a public demonstration in its favor should not be permitted." So then the New York Times put up a defense to the statement by these pastors. And this is what the New York Times wrote. "We do not quite understand all the emotion which others have expressed in this matter. It is absurd to make moan over the imagined humiliation and degradation Benga is suffering. The pygmies are very low in the human scale. And the suggestion that Benga should be in a school instead of a cage ignores the high probability that school would be a place from which he could draw no advantage whatsoever or whatever. I just want you guys to know, you're not going to hear these stories, right? How many of you have never heard the story of Otto Benga? Yeah. You can look it up. See, if you believe that you evolved from something, it changes the way you live your life. It changes the way you look at people. Oh, you're a greater human being than I. You're a lesser human being than I. We're on different scales here. There's this confusion that a simple life is a primitive life. Even American Indians here in the United States, they lived not a primitive life. They lived a simple life. But there's this confusion that, oh, people and cultures that are living these simple lives are living primitive lives. They have not evolved. Otto Benga's story, it's a sad story. World War II happened, and so all passenger trip travel was prevented, and he wasn't allowed to return back to Africa because there was no way to get him there with World War I happening. He became depressed, and he committed suicide at the age of 32. True story. We're going to remember what Jesus has done, but I want to say this. This is really important to tie some things up. I've literally just scratched the surface here. I didn't even talk about dragons. I've got a whole section here about dragons. Okay, I'm going to say this really quick here. You ready? Dragons, real quick. Just real quick. No. But we're going to save this. We're going to save that. Bob, we're going to save it for Bible and Science Night. No, here's the thing. Because I don't want to change gears so quickly off of Otto Benga. That's why. With Otto Benga here, here's what happens. As I've presented this over the last 2 months, as we've been going through verse by verse in Genesis, still in chapter 1, I want you to see this, that evolution cannot be proven. It can't be proven because there was nobody there to see these things happening. It cannot be replicated. Oh, we've made some amino acids at the bottom of a test tube. That is not life. Oh, and by the way, we had to make this experiment go a certain way because if oxygen is introduced, it would destroy what's there. So you're making an environment that isn't even real. You're doctoring the experiment to make it look like what you want it to look like. And even then, it isn't really life. Life cannot come from non-life. So, okay, so Jim, evolution can't be proven. It's this theory and an incorrect one at that. Okay, but wait a second. Jim, didn't you say that you know, as far as these events in the beginning, you weren't there? Yes, I was not there. I was not there and neither were you in Genesis chapter 1. And so I guess then we look at this and it's like, well, this evolution can't be proven. No eyewitnesses. Christianity can't be proven. No eyewitnesses. Oh, wait, no, this is the difference between Christianity and this belief of creationism and evolution. Because Christianity did, and creationism had an eyewitness. You know who that eyewitness was? What if I told you the person who observed these things happening was here on earth, came to earth, and walked and talked among us? And what if I said that the prophecies of who he was going to be, where he was going to be born, what he would do. What if I told you that every single prophecy about him came true? This person who was the eyewitness at the very beginning. See, evolution doesn't have an eyewitness at the beginning. But creationism, Christianity, we have the eyewitness. His name is Jesus. The creator of everything came here. Evolution doesn't have that. And this is what I encourage people to do. Wait, is Christianity provable? Yes, it is. There's this crazy thought in this world that, oh, it's just based on feelings and you can't really prove it. Yes, you can. And here's what I'm going to encourage any skeptic. I encourage you to disprove Jesus. Because if you can disprove Jesus, then you can disprove all the rest of it. But if you cannot disprove Jesus, then everything that he said is true. because he is God. We spent all of 2014 going through the Gospel of John, where John clearly states that Jesus is God. The eyewitness, the creator at the very beginning. Jesus said this in John chapter 5, verse 44, speaking to the Jews and in their doubt, "How can you believe when you receive glory from one another, but you don't see glory that comes from the only God? Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one who accuses you, Moses, on whom you have set your hope." And look at these next two verses here. "For if you believed Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote of me. But if you do not believe his writings," which Genesis is one of the writings that Moses wrote, Jesus said, "if you do not believe his writings, how will you believe my words?" If we start going, okay, right here in the very first chapter of the Bible, you know, it didn't really mean that God created. It really means that he evolved. Okay, then when you flip over to the New Testament, what makes you take any of Jesus' words with any weight? You see, the Bible is designed to take all of it, or you take none of it. You can't just go, oh, it's like a buffet line. I'm just going to take a little bit of this, and ooh, I don't really like that. I'm going to skip that. And this is not what that means, so I'm going to skip that too. Oh, this, I like this. This makes me feel good. I'm going to take this. There are people that are doing that with the Bible. They're hopscotching through it, and they're picking out what they like, and they're turning away from things that God is clearly speaking to them about. Jesus himself said, if you ignore the words of Moses, then how can you believe my words? So to disprove creation, what a person needs to do is to disprove that Jesus is who he said that he is. I'm going to ask the guys to do this. If we could do a few things here. Dave, could you do me a favor? Could you open those double doors and bar those doors for me, the ones right there? Yes. That'd be great. Oh, there's two Daves right there. Yes. If your name's Dave, could you please open the door? That'd be great. Thank you very much. No, that'd be great. Yes. There's little hooks on the back of it. It's getting a little stuffy up here for sure. I don't know how it is out there. If I could have the men get ready, and we're going to distribute the communion elements. The worship team can come on up as well. There's a Bible commentator named Donald Gray Barnhouse. Donald Gray Barnhouse wrote this about man and man's tendency to try to exalt himself and ignore God. This has happened through all of human history. The idea of man going, I can do this by myself. I don't need God. Barnhouse wrote, quote, "God gave man brains to see things, these things. And the sorrowful answer is that God gave man brains, for example, to smelt iron and to make a hammerhead and nails. And God grows a tree and gives man strength to cut it down, and brains to fashion a hammer handle from the wood. And when a man has the hammer and the nails, God will put out his hand and let man drive those nails through it. Place him on a cross in a supreme demonstration that men reject God." You see, the brain with which people think that they think it through and they go, I just reject God. God gave that to them. People are using what God has given them to reject him. When Jesus hung on a cross for us, a historical event, not a fable, not a fairy tale, he hung on a tree. The nails that went through his hand were created from metals that he placed in the earth. The tree that he was affixed to was a tree that he caused to grow. The people who crucified him, he loved and he continued to love even as they crucified him. How great is the love of God? Our God loves us so much. God is not angry at us. And even this morning, my prayer is that the little that I've shared this morning will cause you to go, wait a second, and make you consider again where you came from and what worth you have. This is why I didn't talk about human beings. We'll talk about human beings the next time we're in Genesis, because I believe human beings and what God thinks about us deserves an entire service. Because he has a lot to say about what he thinks about you and I. But as we are here this morning and as those communion elements are there, let's sing a song to our Lord. And we will then partake together the communion elements. So go ahead and hold on to those.